නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So as you all know, we were discussing Chabbisodhana Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, the third book. And there the name actually mentioned Cha Sodhana. That means six types of purifications. By the way, the Sutta contains only five types of purifications. And the commentary suggests that one seems to be lost during the verbal transformation or the verbal transmission of this content for many centuries, and actually the commentary suggests certain other six purification, and we'll discuss that as the last purification. Anyway, these five purifications that we are going to discuss. So why Buddha explained these five purifications here is due to a reason. That is where Buddha mentioned that particular bhikkhu, if he declares that he is an arahant, so it is not that something that we can immediately reject, and again it is not something that we can immediately accept, because there are certain people who can simply overestimate themselves, or someone can even cheat, and due to such reasons people can declare that they are arahants. So Buddha mentioned if someone is declaring as an arahant, there's a kind of a questionnaire that we can ask from them. So that is what actually included in this sutta. So by going through this sutta, it is not the motivation that we are learning this to ask this question from the so-called arahants, but rather we as practitioners, we can learn about these purifications, we can learn about these different meditation techniques, and through which we can recognize or we can verify whether we are also traveling in the proper direction. So that is the sole idea of discussing this sutta. So among these six, among these five purifications, now we already discussed three purifications. The first one we discussed is based on the four ways of expressions, vohara. So when we are dealing with our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, so we are communicating with the outside world, and we have to refer what we have seen, we have to refer what we have heard, we have to refer what we have sensed. And we have to refer what we have cognized, and we have to communicate based on those subjects. On that matter, how one can avoid any kind of an attachment or grasping, so that one's mind be purified or ultimately detached from each and every such vohar expressions. So that is the kind of a question being asked. So how this person, this arahant, has dealt with it. And then the second question is related to the five aggregates, where we know that mainly the mental side are divided into four aggregates: feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. And the physical part is represented as the form aggregate or the rupakkhanda. So when going through our different kinds of experiences, how one can dealt with these aggregates so that ultimately mind get enlightened without getting attached to any of these, without being identified with any of these aggregates. So that is a question asked as the second question, and that also we have discussed, and how a proper arahant would answer it. And then last time actually we discussed about the third purification, that is related to six elements. So six elements are the typical four elements plus space element and the consciousness element. The typical four elements are the typical material elements, so four dhatu or mahabhuta, patavi, apo, tejo, vayu. And on top of that we are talking about the space element, where all the physical things are very much oriented, keeping some form of space in between. So that is the space element. and the whole mental world is represented here using the consciousness element. So therefore, altogether there are six elements, and these six elements is another way of representing this so-called animate beings. So when we are dealing with, while we being representing these six elements, and again the other forms, other people, other beings are also available, how one can dealt with these six elements without getting attached, without getting grasped, without involved in any kind of an attachment. So that is the third question asked, and we discuss about the answer what a proper Arahant would give. And now we can discuss today about the fourth purification. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned here, so when someone is giving proper answer, you can happy about it, but don't stop it. But don't stop at that level. You better ask another question. So that is why a second type of purification is checked. And when he answers that properly, so you can be happy about it. And then you better ask another question. That is why the third purification is asked about the elements. And then when if he answers that also properly, then be happy about it and don't stop there. You better ask another question. Now actually, all these different kinds of purifications are in a way different ways of expressions, different way of representing our experiences. Someone may experience or someone may explain it with respect to the different kinds of expressions, say different way of communication, how he dealt with the outside world. So that is one way of explanation. And the second way is related to the five aggregates. And third way is related to the six elements. And now today we are going to discuss the 12 ayatanas. That is another way. So likewise, in the Buddha's teaching, we can recognize different way of explaining things. Because it is not just one method, but there are many methods available. Because people are having different temperaments, different characters. Therefore, it is not just a one method available for everyone to get enlightened, but there are many methods available. So those many methods are somewhat discussed in this sutta. Basically, we can say six methods are discussed. So therefore, we don't need to in a way kind of worry that we haven't gone through each and every method. But at least if we touch upon at least one or two methods and we have dealt with it and we are dealing with it, so that indicates that fairly we are in line with the any kind of a purification. Now, when the fourth question is asked, saying good, one may delight and rejoice in that bhikkhu's words. Having done so, a further question may be put thus. But friend, there are these six internal and external bases, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. What six? They are the eye and forms, the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and flavors, the body and tangibles, the mind and mind objects. So basically these are very much familiar to us because we have internal six sense bases, and corresponding to each and every such internal sense base, we have the external objects. Those are the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, flavors, tangibles and the mental objects. So altogether everything becomes 12. Now the question is, so Buddha has explained about these 12, and how does the Venerable One know, how does you see regarding these six internal and external bases, so that through not clinging your mind is liberated from the taints? Actually, in the statement written here, I have taken Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. So does he see? I feel we have to put as the how do you see? Because now we are asking from the so-called Arahant. Now we are very much like questioning him. Now we are asking from him how you understood. How you recognize these 12 bases. how you come across it, how you dealt with them, so that ultimately your tens are destroyed, so that you are not clinging to any of this, not grasping any of this. You, how did you deal with it so that your mind get cleansed or purified? So this is the question asked. And then, now this person, Arahant, if he is a proper Arahant, if he is a right Arahant, and he done the job properly, then he, without much problem or without any trouble, he may easily answer the question. Because he has done his job. He went through the practice for many years. Or he is a hard worker. So likewise, we can understand and say, if you are done something properly, so you don't need to look at a book, you don't need to ask from another person, because you know very well. You are expert in that subject, so you can easily answer the question. So similarly, Buddha mentioned here, so he may easily answer the question like this. Friends, with the destruction of fading away, cessation, giving up and relinquishing of desire, lust, delight, craving, attraction and clinging, and of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies regarding the I forms, I consciousness, and things cognizable by the mind through I consciousness, I have understood that my mind is liberated. Now basically, he has to guard the eye door. He has to guard the ear door, nose door, tongue door, body door, and the mind door. Now these are the doors, we can say, through which we are communicating with the outside world. Very much like these are operating like sensors in today's terms. And when we are dealing with them, so ultimately different eye consciousness and different kinds of, even if you go a little deeper, contacts, different feelings, and so that different kinds of thoughts, and even before that perceptions and then thoughts, and even if we are not mindful, even can lead to mental proliferation. So these things can happen. As we discuss in the Madhupindika Sutta, so these six senses are quite vulnerable, and we operate them without mindfulness, then ultimately we get caught. So we are seeing something through the eyes. So when we see something, so immediately the eye consciousness may arise as a result of the combination of eye and the form. And then what happens is, now we may be interested of what we see. And then we want to look at it closely. We want to recognize it. Because we might have feeling a pleasurable feeling, or maybe even a painful feeling, then we want to look at it closely, examine it. Now we are getting closer, we get attached. And now we are thinking. Now different thoughts may start to rise up, start up, and then we start more and more thinking. And ultimately the thinking may overpower us, and it becomes a papancha, mental proliferation. And ultimately there are many different kinds of defilements going to arise. Now this is the typical way of dealing with the outside world. When we see something, when we hear something, when we experience some kind of odor, when we are going through some sort of delicacies, experiencing some flavors, and when we have certain tangibles, and even when we are experiencing thoughts, so we don't know, if we don't know how to stop there, then we are going to the level of proliferations and ultimately end up with stress, suffering, and different kinds of problems, maybe conflicts, quarrels, many different things are there. Now this is a typical way of handling things. But when one becomes mindful, the operation has to little change, so that one starts to guard them, guard the faculties. One is aware of what is going on. When you are looking at something, so you are aware, now I am looking at something, now I see something, say, now certain, say, lust is arising in the mind, kind of attachment is arising in the mind. So I get involved, now I am thinking, now I am too much thinking. So likewise, we can apply breaks at whatever the moment. If we are developing mindfulness, then definitely we should be aware what is really going on, rather than simply being a victim of the whole process. So we have to have some sort of a safe ground. While being there, you can watch the whole situation. You are very much like an observer. So you are observing what's really going on at the eye faculty. Similarly, when we hear something, so probably if we get attracted to that, then we start internally thinking about it. We also start to participate, and we may be even enjoying it, and maybe even thinking, and ultimately many different kinds of defilements may arise which were absent previously. But when we are mindful, so we can recognize all this process, how maybe defilements are arising, how we get involved, how we lost our balance, how again mind start thinking, talking, and we get stressed up. So all these differences, all these problems arising because of that hearing would be easy to recognize. Interesting thing is, more you do it, you can very much like recognize that at its early stages. Previously, it might have taken long time. Only when you are, say, being in an argument, you understand. But later, you are not getting into an argument, but you are internally have some friction, but you know, I don't need to talk, I don't need to blame, I don't need to get on to argument, but internally you have some suffering. That is good, rather than going to the argument. And later, say for example, you are not going even to that level, you can recognize some sort of a resistance, some sort of a irritation is available in the mind, and you can recognize that. Now you are not reacting, now you are not promoting. Now you are mindfully aware of it. And later, the very first few thoughts arising due to some sort of a sense impingement, you can recognize. Say someone is blaming. Now you hear the sound and kind of irritation arising in the mind. It hasn't come to the level of getting to arguments, getting to quarrel. It hasn't come to that level because you are able to notice it at its very early stages. At its inception, you can recognize it. It's a kind of a minor irritation maybe now. So you are aware, now you are little ready, little cautious that a certain difference, certain change has happened in my mind. So I have to be vigilant, I have to be careful not to allow this irritation to grow to the level of anger, to the level of resistance, to the level of revenge, to the level of quarrel or argument. So you are being cautious about what is going on. And as a result of that, probably that irritation may fade away. Same thing is true for what whenever you go through certain odors, whenever you go through certain, say, flavors, whenever you go through bodily contact, tangibles, and whenever you go through various mental objects. Actually, this subject is further discussed in the Satipatthana Sutta, how one is dealing with the ayatanas, sense bases. If you refer Dhammanupassana section in the Satipatthana Sutta, so Buddha mentioned how one has to recognize these faculties when they are operating with the outside world. You know that the eye is healthy and eye is operating, now it is going to see something, you are aware of it. And you are aware about the form. And now, if there is some sort of a defilement, sanyojana, going to arise, you are aware of that as well. Now say, you are looking at a beautiful scene. Now you are aware. You know that you are seeing it. As a result of that, suppose there is a desire arising. So you are very well aware, okay, now there is a desire. Yancha tadubayam paticca uppajjati sanyojanam tancha pajanati. So here Buddha points out as a sanyojana, as a fetter, whatever the way a defilement arising because of this seeing, so you can recognize it. And then Yathacha anuppannasa sanyojanasa upadho hoti tancha pajanati. Now as you are continuing your practice, so you may understand, okay, previously there was no such kind of a fetter. Previously there was no such kind of a defilement. But now there's a arising of a defilement. Previously mind was fairly clean and maybe simple or maybe clear. There is no any kind of a defilement, any stress. But now there's a kind of a defilement arising. So you are aware of that very early stage. And interestingly, so that this very awareness might be enough to remove that defilement. So sometimes actually we may have to use various other techniques. But most of the time when you have developed a fair amount of mindfulness, so this very awareness that you are aware now, there is a defilement arising, there is lust arising, there is friction arising, there is irritation arising, there is a little jealousy arising. So when you are aware of that at its very early stages, it easily fades away. And once you are able to know that it has abandoned, you know that it is now abandoned. It is not available right now. It's now again mind is free. So once it is free, so there is no defilement for a considerable period of time. So likewise, if we can operate to each and every sense base, so it's a kind of a very diligent practice. So you can't spend time ignorantly, rather you have to be fairly attentive, fully aware what's really going on. Are there defilements arising because of the interaction between I and the forms? Are there defilements arising because of the interaction between ear and the sounds? Are there defilements arising because of the interaction between nose and odors? Tongue and the flavors, body and the tangibles? And are there defilements arising when a mental object appears in the mind? Now this is what we have to be, in a way, kind of guard our senses. It's a kind of a very attentive practice. You can't have kind of a drowsy mind to do it. And again, you can't do it with a restless mind. So you have to have a very good mental equilibrium. So you have to have a very balanced mind. Then only you can maintain it. Actually, probably we may learn it during our meditation session at our early stages, but later it has to be a lifetime experience, practice. At the beginning, maybe you are doing it during your walking session. Say, for example, you are walking and now say you are not keeping your attention on the foot, rather you are trying to keep your attention at nowhere, not establishing your mind at any place. So if your mind is not established anywhere, so it's an unattached mind, unassociated mind, detached mind, dispassionate mind. It is not involved anywhere. Even though you see something, mind is not there. Even though you hear something, mind is not there. So that is also very beautifully explained in the Malunkiputta Sutta. So Buddha mentioned, as we discuss in the Bahya Sutta, Malunkiputta Sutta also explains the same thing. Ditte dittamattam ditta sutamuta vinyatabhesu dhammesu ditte dittamattam bhavissati. So, ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. So, now you see, but that's it. You stop there. Your mind don't go to the level of proliferation. And now hear something, that's it, you heard it, that's it. Your mind remain calm. You didn't lose your equilibrium. You are able to maintain your tranquility. Your mind is not confused. And mute mutamattam bhavissati. Whenever you experience kind of an odor, kind of a taste, kind of a tangible, it doesn't disturb the mind. You may recognize it, but was able to maintain your stability. And even when you recognize some sort of a mental object in the mind, so you are aware, okay, now there is a thought. Now there is a mental object. Now there is a mental image.
So you are very aware of it. But that's it, and it doesn't grow. It doesn't overpower you. And interestingly, Buddha mentioned when you are able to do it, then tato tvang malum ke putta natena. Now you are not there. Say for example, you are looking at a beautiful picture. Now suppose you are going to an art gallery and there are very interesting art work. And once you see a very beautiful picture, so immediately our mind get attracted there, and basically you are there now. So you have become that. And you can easily say, okay, I am that. You have become that. Because mind is fully involved in that picture. Now similarly, say if you hear a beautiful song, it's really beautiful, it is something that you have heard several years ago, only now you are able to recognize it. And now you are enjoying it, now you are even murmuring it, and your fingers may touch even the melodiously to the, say, to the table. So you are fully involved, delighted by that sound, delighted by that song. So you are there, you are born in the singing world, you are born in the music world, so you are there, you have become that. So similarly the sounds, similarly the smells, tastes, tangibles and the mental object. So whenever mental object happen in the mind, so we start adding more and more thoughts to it, constructing more and more things. Ultimately many thoughts are there, now mind has fully obsessed with thoughts, fully occupied with thoughts. We are in the level, or we are in the realm of thinking now. So we are born into thinking. But if you are not doing it, say thought has come and it has gone, that's it, so no thoughts, so then you are not there, you are not born into thoughts, your mind is not occupied with thoughts. Similarly, say you have heard a song, you know it is a song, but you are not there, you are not going to involve with that, so you are able to maintain the mental integrity. You are able to maintain your freedom of mind, uninvolved mind. Natena. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, yato tvang malukya putta natena, tato tvang malukya putta natat. So when you are not there, or you are not involved there, so you are not inside that. You are not sort of adhered to that. Yato tvang bahiya malumke putta na tatta, tato tvang malumke putta neva idda na hurang na ubhaya mantarena ese vanto dukkhas. So similar to Bahiya Sutta, he also Buddha mentioned, so if you are not there, and similarly if you are not here, that means even here, so thinking that I am seeing, I am hearing, say I am watching, I am thinking. So even if you don't think like that, if you are not making a person even here, so-called kind of observing person, individual here, then you are not even here and not in between. And then Buddha mentioned this is the end of suffering. And another interesting point I like to highlight with the Malunkiputta Sutta, where Buddha mentioned now this practice has to do based on the present moment activities, or present moment objects. An interesting point here is tankim manyasi malunke putta yete chakku vinyaya rupa aditta aditta pubba nacha passasi nacha te hoti passeyanti atite tatta chando va rago va pemang vati no hetam bante. Now this is a very interesting statement where Buddha mentioned, or ask from Venerable Malunkiputta, suppose Malunkiputta that you haven't seen a particular object, particular form. You haven't seen it in the past. And even now you are not seeing it. And in the future also you are not going to see it, and you are not even going to think about it. From such kind of a form, do you have any kind of a possibility of getting attachment, possibility of getting any kind of a chandaraga, kind of an involvement, kind of an attachment, kind of a delight. Then Malunga Buddha says no. Because you haven't seen it, so that it is not recorded in the mind, and even right now you are not seeing it, and you have no thought even to look at it in the future, and you are not getting a chance. Then you can simply ignore that, because there is no possibility of arising defilements because of that. Similarly, Buddha mentioned about the sounds. So assume that you haven't heard a particular sound, and currently also you are not hearing it, and you have no thought even to hear it, and in the future also you are not going to hear it. Then you don't have any kind of an impact coming because of those sounds. Now this actually fairly clarify our path, our practice. How it clarifies our path is because now we can narrow down our practice. We don't need to go and practice on all different kinds of forms, all different kinds of sounds, all different kinds of flavors, all different kinds of odors, all different kinds of tangibles, all different kinds of thoughts. But only we have to operate what we are experiencing, and probably what we have experienced and now having kind of an impact. Say for example, you have seen a beautiful image and you enjoyed that, and more minor signs you started watching, investigating, and now certain amount of attachment has developed, certain amount of nimittas have stored in your mind, so there's a kind of an involvement. Now you have to cleanse it, now you have to operate on it, now you have to practice on it, and maybe it may appear as a mental image right now, because there's a kind of an impediment, kind of an influence, because you have kind of a attachment towards what you have seen. But on the other hand, if we don't need to worry about the things which are completely outside, and you haven't experienced, and not now you are not experiencing, and you are in the future also you are not going to experience. So therefore our practice is fairly narrowed down only to what we have experienced and what we are experiencing right now. And even what we have experienced in the past has to have a kind of impact today, then only they are also valid for our practice. Necessary to get on to a practice, but otherwise we can simply forget about them. And here, so Venerable Malunga Buddha actually interestingly mentioned, so if you are not mindful, so what happens is, Rupan Diswa Sati Mutta, Piya Nimittam Manasikarotu. Now if you are not mindful, you start watching various interested signs. Say if you are hearing, you are going to recognize different sounds. Say you are going through certain smell, so if you are interested and not mindful, so your mind automatically get involved and start getting delighted with different kinds of other signs available in that orders. Same thing as taste, same thing for tangibles and for mind objects. So when you are not mindful, so the mind is very much like trained to do that, habituated to do that. Automatically mind go and involve with it. Saratta chitto vedeti, and you are feeling it, you are experiencing it with kind of a delight, with kind of a lust, with kind of an attachment. Tancha ajjo saya tittati, and you are there, you are fully involved, you are adhered to that. Tassa vaddati vedana aneka rupa sambhava. Now many further feelings are arising, further sensations are arising, more thoughts are arising, more proliferation is going to happen. Abhijjacha vihesacha chitta massu upahangachi. Now mind get involved, mind get stressed up, and evang achinato dukkhang ara nibbananti ucchati. Now you are far away from nibbana. Now rather mind is boiling, mind is burning, mind is hurting, because you are too involved. So same thing, Venerable Malungi Putta explain about the sounds, then odors, flavors, tangibles and mental objects. But on the other hand, when one develops mindfulness, when one practices insight meditation, vipassana, so what's the difference? Naso rajyati rupesu, rupan disva patissatu. Now his mind is not that involved. His mind tries to maintain its purity, not getting caught up. And mind is not getting delighted with what you are seeing. And you are basically established on mindfulness. Patissato. So you are very established in the mindfulness. So you are operating while being in that pedestal, in that space of mindfulness. Viratta chitto vedeti. Now, mind has kind of a dispassionate attitude. So you are able to do a distant observation, detached observation. There's a kind of a separation between you as an observer and the form as the object. So kind of detached observation, kind of a separation. That's a distance. Tanchanajyo sayatithati. As a result of that, now you are not getting adhered to that. You are not getting involved in that. You are not going to that, inside that. Natasa pasato rupang sevato chapi vedanam kiyati no pachiyati. Now, whatever the feeling aroused already because of the interaction, now because of your proper practice, now that starts to fade away. Assume that there are little thoughts arising, but because of your mindful practice, they start to fade away. You are not promoting them. You are not feeding them. You are not getting delighted by them. Rather, you are mindfully watching them, trying to get separated from them, detached from them. As a result of that, they start to fade away. Kiyati no pachiyati evang so charati sato. Now you are maintaining your life with mindfulness. Evang apachinato dukkang. Now you are slowly decaying or fading away the suffering. Santike nibbanang ucchati. Now you are getting closer to nibbana. So I have taken another similar thing with respect to the mental objects. So whenever there's a mental object appearing in the mind, so you are aware of it, mindful about it, and viratta chitto vedeti. So there's a kind of a detached observation. And you are not going into it. You are not being involved in it. And what you have cognized, and whatever the feeling aroused because of that is now going to slowly fade away. And you are being mindful about the full scenario. And now the suffering is fading away, reducing, and you are getting closer to Nibbana. Now this is the practice that we need to do whenever we are operating mindfully with the six sense bases. And on the other hand, I like to take another few examples to support this practice. Now, in certain other suttas, Buddha explained the dependent origination or the patisamuppada with respect to these sense bases. One example is Upasuti Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, so because of form and the eye, there's a chakku vijnana, the eye consciousness. As a result of that, the contact. Then the contact causes feeling, and the feeling causes tanha, the craving, vedana paccha tanha. And that causes clinging, upadana, and the upadana causes another kind of becoming. Now you become that. As I explained already, say whenever you suppose, say if you take another example, say you are enjoying a particular, orange juice, you are going to enjoy orange juice. Suppose you are quite thirsty and you are a little tired as well. Now you come home and you see there's a very good fresh orange juice available. Now immediately you saw it, now you take it to your hand, Now you take a little sip. Now it's beautiful and it's really tasty. Now the tongue consciousness arises again and again, and you are enjoying it. As a result of that, the contact happens, that the feelings, the pleasurable feelings happen, and now you like it, you have a desire to it, you are really like it, you are attached to it. Now you have become that. So you are in a, now assume that you even close your eyes and you are enjoying that orange juice. Now you have fully become that. Your mind is fully there. So you are born to that. You are born to that experience. So this is how slowly we are getting caught to this paticchasamuppada. Because of our sense interactions. Whenever I interact with the forms, we get on to this paticchasamuppada. Whenever ear interact with the sounds, we may get caught to this cycle of paticchasamuppada or this chain of actions. So that is explained in the Upasthuti Sutta, how we create suffering by getting caught to this conditioned process whenever we are dealing with different senses. And another interesting point I like to take here is how consciousness is involved. Now in Majjhe Sutta, an interesting finding is explained. Now in one side or in one extreme, there are the internal sense bases, and the other side we have the external sense bases. In between the operation of the consciousness, we don't aware, we don't know, because of the attachment to the either to the left side or the right side. Say for example, there is a kind of a touching sensation. So it's a very beautiful, very pleasant, tangible. So it's now you are experiencing it. And body is going through that experience. Tangibles is also there. Now body is in one side, tangible is the other side. Now when the knowing arises, the cognition arises, the vijnana, body consciousness, now it does the full distinction. Okay, there is a tangible. There is a beautiful, pleasant tangible, pleasant sensation, pleasant touch. So you start delighting with that touch. You start getting involved in that touch. Now you are onto the right side. Say for example, left side is the body, right side is the touching sensation or the tangible. So whenever you cognize as a beautiful, pleasant touch, tangible, now you have tanha, craving towards that. So the craving slowly put you there. Now you are there with the tangible, with the touching sensation. And we've lost the distinction, the part of discrimination, that activity of the consciousness, dividing this as I and that, or I and the, say the tangible. So that distinction is done by the consciousness. But that we lost. We can't recognize that. And on the other hand, say if you are putting too emphasis onto the body side, say, I am really happy. Say, I am really experiencing happiness. I really enjoy. Now you, as a person, you are highlighting yourself. As an individual, now you are born. You are born to an experience. And you are now a person, an individual, I. So you have lost onto the left side now. You are being there. And you, I mean, we don't know, we can't understand the operation of the consciousness. So therefore, in the Majjhe Sutta, it is mentioned, so whenever we discuss these six sense bases, so the internal sense bases can be recognized as one end, and the external sense bases can be recognized as the outer end, the other end, and the craving is operating as a kind of a person, as a person who is getting involved these two, entangling these two, and we lose the operation, or we can't understand the operation of the consciousness, which is operating in the middle, in the Majje, in the middle, the consciousness operating, but we can't understand it because of the craving quickly entangle the two sides. So these are very interesting ways that the Buddha explains Dhamma, how we are going through different experiences through our senses, and we get caught up and we get involved. Either we are there, we are born as something, we are born as at the external object, or either we are here considering I am experiencing, I am a so-called person, I am a watching, I am observer, I am a listener, I am going through some sensations, I am the thinker. I am thinking, so I am here. So I am is born here. So always this I is now operating at this side, on the left side, so you are born here. So it's kind of an entanglement, kind of an involvement, kind of a becoming process. But when we are going through proper practice, so this becoming process has to be minimized. This entangling process has to be minimized. Becoming either onto the right side, that is to the external sense object, has to be minimized. And you being a person, you being an individual, I am experiencing, I am listening, I am enjoying. So that part also has to be minimized. So if there is any sort of an eye-making happens, that also has to be minimized. So therefore, it's a very interesting practice, and in a way, kind of challenging practice, and we always have to be diligent in order to do that properly. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Questions, you may type them into the chat, or you may also raise your hand. Bhante, I received a written question.
Yeah.
Okay. It says, respected Bhante, a question about Kama Raga. Please, can you illustrate and describe the difference between gross and subtle Kama Raga? Also, giving examples, please. What kind of Kama Raga does the Sakadagami still experience? Thank you, respected Bhante Theruvan Sannai.
Yeah, I think now, even today, we discuss about how we are experiencing different forms, sounds, odors, tangibles, sense objects, semental objects. Now, assume whatever we like. So there are beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, very beautiful odors, very pleasant odors, and very delicious flavors. And these all come as the panchakama. This is what we are always going after. And maybe very pleasant sensations. And these are the typical external objects we give enough value, enough emphasis, and we desire them, we want to have them, we want to enjoy them, we want to possess them. And because of that, now there's an attachment, there's a desire, there's a craving arising in the mind. So that is where, for these five kinds of sensual cords, we are having kind of a desire. So that is the sensual desire. Now this sensual desire promotes Kama Raga. So internally now we have kind of a desire, a potential to get attached to these different sense objects. And other than that, there are different status. Say I have a social status, I have a recognition, I have a respect, I have my name, I have a reputation, I have my designation, say I have my social status. So likewise, and maybe my family background, maybe my upbringing, say my education. So we give a lot of value to these other states as well, even though they are not sort of physical. So those also promote desire. So this sometimes we can call as klesha karma. So different kinds of such things are also there. So we mentally really value those. We really value the social status. We really value the educational background, or the maybe a degree, maybe a PhD or whatever it is, and we really value that. So we really sort of say, how to say, we want to become that. And we really get a kind of a desire to that. We want to become that. So now all this actually comes under the different kinds of sense objects. And we have a desire for that. So all these promotes kamaraga, sense desires. Now, it is mentioned when one becomes a sotapanna, he still has kamaraga, but he may not do any kind of a wrong, unwholesome deed because of this kamaraga, which is taking him to the hell realm. But he may still enjoy senses because he has kamaraga, he has sensual desire. But it is not extremely gross, rather it may be to some extent he is available, which is not enough or don't have much gravity to take him to the hell realm. But when it is considered the Sakadagami, so it is mentioned it is so further diluted, further weakened, so that this particular Sakadagami, who is called the once returner, has only a limited amount of sense desire, so that he may at most come to the sensual world only once. Now, if you consider the stream winner, Sotapanna, because of the fair amount of sense desire he has, he may at most can come 7 times to the sensual world. But if we consider the Sakadagami, he may return only once. When one becomes a non-returner, Anagami, he completely uproots this Kamaraga, so he may not return to the sensual world anymore. That means he never going to be born as a human being, never going to be born as a celestial being in the typical sense celestial realms. He may be born as a Brahma in the Brahma realm, because he still has subtle Ruparaga and Aruparaga. Now, and your question is how to have kind of a demarcation, what is the extent of the Kamaraga a Sakadagami is having? Actually, very difficult to say. Because, I mean, how are you going to measure? So it's very difficult to give a kind of a clear answer here. Because, just to give a simple example, suppose you are having a 100% Kamaraga to a particular song. So you are so involved, you are recorded that again and again, you are listening to that, so you are very much like obsessed with it. So you are fully involved, very much like the typical Putujjana. Now suppose now you become a Sotapanna, so you are enjoying, but time to time you are advising yourself, don't listen to it too much, you are too involved with it, try to keep your mind free. So likewise, kind of an internal urge is coming and it is advising you now not to enjoy too much, not to delight that song too much. So you understand that kind of a delusion happened because of that sound, because of that song. So kind of a training now you are going through. And now assume that you become a Sakadagami. I feel that you may still have slight enjoyment when you are hearing this song, but not too involved, not fully deluded by that. So likewise, this is also kind of an approximate answer. So I can't really give a proper exact measurement telling, okay, this is the amount that you are having. I mean, this is a kind of an approximate answer that I can give. Okay, Jennifer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite Don for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hi, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you for the very valuable Dhamma session today. At the end, you mentioned many other suttas as well. I feel, in a way, that shows how important this topic is. It has been covered in many other suttas too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And What I call today is actually, Bhante, I have two questions. One thing is about session today. The second one is more of a technical question, like how to find a previous Dhamma talk. I'll come to that later. The first one, Bhante, like I thought of sharing my experience when you mentioned that our thoughts always start with something that we are familiar with. I think I really, that kind of really related to me, because in my walking meditation, that's where it comes. It always starts with something very familiar, and then this from the past, it goes to the future, come back to the past, and so on. So I actually, like, you know, at the beginning, when I, before I start the walking, I kind of tell my mind, like, don't go into too much of habits. I know that you have you have a kind of wandering with habits. Just stay with the walking, right? Kind of like remind myself, and that seems, in a way, help me for a while. And then again, when I see it again, then I remind myself again, and so on. So, but what I wanted to share was that the thoughts that we know, and then based on that, how we focus. It is really, the mind is really indulging in that if we give it a chance.
Yeah, definitely. That's why it's a real training, in a way, real battle. So we have to be on guard, on our toes, as our Bhatti Dhammajiva mentioned, on our toes, because we never know when the mind may get involved. So we have to be fully alert, fully diligent to recognize any kind of an attachment, any kind of a grasping. So at that time, actually the mindfulness may indicate us. And then we have to slowly relax, release, and settle back into the present moment with a kind of a detached awareness.
Yes, and yes, correct. And then to me, I want to share was that thinking of that, you know, I have this bad habit of doing this. Please be careful. That kind of reminder helps me at the beginning.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. But the second question I have is more of a technical question, in the sense, like, about the yesterday's Dhamma talk, the one on the concept and reality, the single Dhamma talk. The recording is not there, Bhante. Is it in a different place?
No. It has to be in the same place. Probably it is not yet uploaded. I will check with the monk who is handling it, because they usually upload it immediately, but it may not have happened yesterday then.
Bhante, that whole page seems to be empty.
Ah, really?
None of the talks are there.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Oh.
So it seems something has gone wrong.
Okay, then I'll check that. That could be a little technical problem, concept and reality. Now I am watching it, so it's there, by the way.
The English one is there. The English one is there, but the single one isn't there.
So I am just putting you into the chat to everybody. I think it is there. Now I am putting the link in the Nisarnamani website. So if you go to this particular link, everything is there. So I have put concept and reality.
Yes, I can see it now.
Yeah.
Yes. So this will have the yesterday one as well, will come up soon. Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Bhante. Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you. For the next question, I would like to invite Joseph.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Yes, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for tonight's lecture. It was a beautiful lecture. I have one question and more of, I guess, a statement. Maybe I'd like to ask you just for your comments. And my question is the question of ignorance. So in the one case, Malokya Putta Sutta, it seems like he's saying that the ignorance is bliss. We have that saying in English, what you don't know, you don't suffer for. And then...
Can you repeat that, Joseph?
That we say in English, English we say ignorance is bliss.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's a saying that comes from 1800s poem. Uh-huh. Where it goes something like,
right.
English is bliss, because once you know that, you know, you suffer for the thing, don't you wish that you had remained ignorant of
right,
it?
Right.
So there's that idea. But then in the 12 links of dependent origination, isn't there, you know, avijja, paccaya, sankhara?
Yeah, that's
sankara,
a, paccaya. Yeah, that is an interesting point, yeah. Actually. Thank you very much for pointing it out. Now, different ways of explanation to this Patisamuppada. So, as you know, it is not the links really matter. It is the principle that is the most important. Imasming sati idang hoti, imasuppada idang uppajjati. Imasming asati idang na hoti, imasanirodha idang nirujjati. When this is available, that is going to be available. And when this is arising, that is also arising. When this is not available, that is also not available, and with the cessation of this, that is also ceasing. Now, this is a very principle, this is the most important part, which is essential, and this principle can be applied to any of those links, the 12 links. And in this sutta, in the Upasuti sutta, and Buddha don't explain about avijja, vijnana, sankhara, and those are not there. So he pointing out how this dependent origination may arise based on the sense contact. Because of I and form, you get the chakku vijnana, and that causes to arise the contact, passa, and which is causing the vedana. Now that vedana, if it is a pleasurable feeling, then you get attracted to that, you get attached to that, you start desiring that, you are craving that. Now the craving is arising. With craving, you get the clinging. With clinging, you become someone, something, an experiencer, and now the mass of suffering going to arise. Now, therefore, it is not necessary to have every time explaining Patisamuppada as say avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. So it is just a one example way of explanation, but you can simply explain it in many different ways. And one interesting way is this, where whenever we are going through some sense interaction, so we get caught to this Patisamuppada, we get caught to this dependent origination and the conditioned experiences. So that is very, very the important point that I also want to highlight here, it is not always have to go through the typical 12 links, but there are many other different ways that Buddha explained the Patisamuppada.
So yeah. that avijja in that case,
yeah,
is, I think, I mean, I remember I was listening last night to Venerable Dhammajiva, and he stated that first part was just for the Buddha to know. It's not for everyone else to know the avijja, paccaya, sankhara, sankhara, paccaya, vijnana, paccaya, namarupa, such paccaya.
Joseph, I mean, even Buddha mentioned, now these links slowly you get visible to the others as well. But at the beginning, you may be fully aware of how passa paccaya vedana or vedana paccaya tanha. So those are the somewhat gross levels. Say when there are pleasurable feelings, okay, now there is a desire arising in the mind. That may be easy to understand. When there are enough desires, okay, mind get involved, mind get attached to it. You are fully born there. That means the tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava. So those parts now probably you can recognize. But more you do that, then slowly you come even forward. Forward in the sense, you come even to the early stages by applying refined mindfulness, refined awareness. Now probably you can even understand how a certain sense impingement happen and then the contact arising. Salayatana paccaya passu. And maybe how even name and form is conditioning the operation of the six senses, sense bases. Say, for example, there's a slight mental image appear in your mind and you start, say, involved with it. And now it is telling you, okay, now you go to, you're closer to the fridge. You better open the fridge. You get a search for an ice cream and you better enjoy it. Now the sixth sense basis start in the action. But initially, what you got is a kind of a little slight mental interaction. But mental interaction has taken you or manifested as a full functional sixth sense basis. So the mental interaction is now, even if you analyze further, as we discuss in the Kajjaniya Sutta, in the consciousness aggregate, so the activity between the consciousness aggregate and the name and form, Namarupa Paccaya Vinyana, Vinyana Paccaya Namarupa, that interaction between consciousness and name and form, that is the really subtle point in the Patisamuppada, and most interesting point is the Patisamuppada. So that is an interesting point that we need to try even to look at. And before, I mean, so when we are interacting with the outside, actually internally we have some sort of a mental world we develop. Without penetrating that, we immediately trying to find something in the outside. But the attachment has happened inside. And the mental image is available inside. Namarupa is available inside. We can't penetrate that, but we are immediately going outside, looking at the ice cream, looking at the song, looking at the, say, a cinema, whatever it is. So this internalizing the practice, or trying to see how the picture is projected towards the canvas or to the screen. So that is the really tricky and interesting part, challenging part that we have to look into, and which may be really interesting.
Well, that leads me to my statement I'd like to make for your opinion.
Yeah.
So I was also inspired by another thing that Venerable Dhammajiva had said, where he was saying, well, is it Vedana Paccaya Tanha or Tanha Paccaya Vedana? Like, he was kind of challenging that. And the other day, I was walking to work, and I was able to sort of, I knew that I was doing Vedana Nupassana. Like, I was walking down the street, but I was just aware of the feeling tones that I had. I just felt feeling tones, and I was looking around, and, you know, I would look over to the left, maybe I would see some garbage, I might have a certain feeling tone for it. But I noticed that it was the feeling tone. I was in the field of feeling tone. And then I was picking up signs, you know, recognizing, you know, garbage. And then I had a certain feeling towards it. But it was definitely the feeling was first. And then the sign was coming. And then the feeling was changing based on the sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Clear. And then I would maybe look and I would see a beautiful person.
Mm.
And then I noticed
the feelings.
Sign
and then feelings.
The feeling changed after the sign came.
It's
and then I did an experiment where I kind of was able to switch into the field of asanya. So I was primarily seeing signs first. I was noticing the sign, and then the feeling was coming kind of after the sign. Like, it was more like I had a sort of equanimous feelings, and I was just noticing signs, and then how the sign would kind of activate a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed to me that
it's a kind of a cycle.
Yes.
It's a kind of a cycle. Now, we typically explain Patisamuppada in a linear way, say avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, and we end up in the suffering. Telling, okay, jara paccaya, jara marana soka parideva, dukkha domanassa, upayasa, sambandha. I mean, kind of, we end there. But rather, when we are applying that to a present moment incident, it's operating like a cycle. And it's end up with some sort of a becoming process, and that happens only a momentarily. But then next, the moment, or the, whatever the, we can say, the kind of the, momentum which is catching up during the first cycle may operate as a power to the next cycle. Then it is getting catching up the energy, so it is boosting up. So it's a kind of a cycle. Now starts kind of depending the now previous momentum is now helping the next level of operation. Now it is further catching up the momentum. Now that is operating or helping a next level of operation. So likewise, it's a kind of a ongoing chain reaction, we can say, kind of a cyclic pattern. It is going operating, and we are continuously, circling around.
Yeah, because there was no choice.
Mm.
That was another thing that was very clear.
Yeah.
Was that the cycle or the reaction was completely involuntary. I didn't look at the garbage and say, okay, I shouldn't feel good about it. It was automatic.
Mm.
It was, automatic feeling.
Yeah.
I look at the beautiful scene automatically. Oh, nice feeling.
Mm.
And that was kind of just interesting to notice how it was so automatic.
Yeah.
There was no choice involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, but thank you, you for your thoughts. Much merit.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. For the next question, I'd like to invite Kumudini.
Hello, Bhante. This is. I want to ask you a question about today's sermon, but will you please clarify? We have to guard our senses, but. You have also mentioned, and my monk here also mentioned, that Buddha used to appreciate music when he hears it and scenery when he appreciates it. So can you tell me the difference between the times when he appreciates it and how we have to guard our senses when we see something nice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Now, point is, we can't say Buddha and the Arahants are kind of a dry and indifferent type of mentality that they are having. Rather, they are fully conscious and their sensitivity of the senses may be even better than ourselves and better than us. And the point is, even though they go through this process, so because the absence of raga dosa moha and absence of avijja does not lead them to mental proliferation. The mental proliferation part is completely not available in them. So that is very, very categorically mentioned in certain verses available in the Suttanipata. So there is no any mental proliferation happen in the Buddhas. And ajjositang natthi tathagatanang. And again it is mentioned, so Buddha never get into any kind of an adherence in the means and adherence in the sense. Now say for example, when we see something beautiful, and as Joseph mentioned, so either we get involved in that, we become that, we go into that, we adhere to that. So such kind of adherences are not available with the Buddha, because the soul potential, because why we become that is because we have a desire. We have the sense desire. We have the kama raga. We have the sensual desire. But when the sensual desire is not there, so the mind may not go and involve with it. Mind may not go and adhere to that. So that means the upadana is not possible. The clinging is not possible. So the becoming is not possible. So even though Buddha experience, he has no adherences, he has no graspings, and mind is uninvolved, and if it is, say, a kind of a pleasant thing, probably he may have a pleasant feeling. But it may not promote any craving.
Thank you, Bhante. But I have thought about this a a lot. Now I know that Buddha can taste food and enjoy it better than any one of us, because everything is so well developed. Supposing we taste something that we like it, and what point do we say, oh, we are not attached to it? You know, I mean, if we don't crave for it another time, is that done and over with?
No, actually, that is a kind of a special skill mentioned about the Arahant. So it is mentioned, if they want to have a pleasurable feeling, if they want to have kind of appreciative feeling, they can have it. Now assume that it is something beautiful. Typically we consider something is beautiful, and with respect to that particular beautiful object, if Buddha wants to have a kind of a pleasurable feeling, he can have it. On the other hand, with respect to that beautiful object, if he want to have kind of a loathsome kind of an attitude, he still can have it. And on the other hand, if he want to have neither loathsome attitude nor any kind of pleasurable attitude, rather he wants to keep his mind neutral, even that is, he can do it. So this kind of a complete mastery of the mind is available with the Arahants.
I see.
Yeah.
No, so I understand that, but Bhante, can you advise how we should go about in such a situation?
Yeah.
Supposing we eat some food and it is tasty, and if we start, we can't say it's not tasty if it is tasty, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Then after that, just don't long for it or crave for it. Is that okay?
Definitely. And on the other hand, one easy way of verification is that, are there any thoughts going on? Are there any inner chatter going on with respect to this food? So then, if there is that kind of an inner chatter, inner longing going on, available with respect to food, so that means mind is involved. But on the other hand, assume that you are enjoying some delicious food, but with a very quiet mind, then most probably your mind is unattached, your mind is not involved, your mind is capable of maintaining its clarity, integrity.
Bhante, and also another thing you mentioned today was, like a song that you might, when you hear it, you live in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't normally listen to a lot of music now because I don't feel like. But I went to a concert in aid of Sri Lanka problem.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there were some songs there that brought memories. I listened to it, but it brought memories. But
yes,
that was it.
Yeah.
I said, okay, is the hand that properly, or should I not have gone to that event at all?
No, I think.
Yeah, because of support.
No, in support of Sri Lanka, you better go. Now the point is, actually, I mean, you have seen it, but assume that after coming back home, if there are many thoughts arising in your mind, so that indicates that you are involved. But at that moment, While you are looking at it, you appreciated that and you are able to finish it there itself. You haven't carried anything from there. So that is much better. So you are able to maintain the tranquility of the mind. You are not being very much disturbed. At that moment, you appreciated that. You have a kind of a gratitude or whatever it is, and that's it, done. But no more second thought about it. So you are...
I recall that after I came home, memories of those songs came to my mind.
Yeah,
and I said,
that's the point. At that time, you have to restrain your mind.
Myself.
Yeah.
Restrain my mind.
That's right. That's right.
That point.
Yeah. So
I'll handle it right then.
Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'll send it to you.
Okay. So, Venerable Sudhira from here joining, and he has to ask another question. Yeah.
No, I'd like to make a comment on the food.
Yeah.
One thing that I use as bhikkhu when I feel that the lust for food is higher, then I use the Buddha's injunction to contemplate it, like
Puttamansa,
the sun's flesh, and just remind myself that This is only to get through the desert.
Exactly, exactly.
And that helps to cool things down.
Yeah, yeah. So many methods are available. So he is mentioning that whenever we are attached to something, say you are enjoying some delicious food, at that time assume that your mind is trying to get involved, trying to get attached. So at that time you can use certain skills, reminders that this is like a putta mantra. So this is like a medicine. This something help you to cross the desert. I mean, it is like sun's flesh. It's not that you are trying to enjoy and be happy about it. Rather, you are trying to maintain the body. Without the food, you can't survive. So you understand the purpose of having food. So likewise, many methods can be used to restrain the mind. Because till we become arahants, or till we become at least anagamis, so our mind get involved with these different sense pleasures. That is unavoidable. But again and again, we have to train the mind, remind the mind, okay, don't get involved, don't get attached, don't grasp things. So likewise, we have to be on guard, and in case mind get involved, we have to slowly release it and try to free the mind.
Okay, thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Very much appreciated.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone,
Sanai.
Okay, thank you. Great. So I have a written question here, Bhante.
Yeah.
It says, "Dear Bhante, does the Maja Sutta explain how we have to look at sensations in meditation, for example, walking sensations on the sole of the foot, and how the external ground feels without mind or consciousness attaching or identifying? Is my understanding correct, Bhante? Can you kindly explain a bit further, please?"
Yeah, actually, Majjhi Sutta very briefly explained these six kinds of explanations. And only thing is, at the beginning of our practice, we have to fairly closely examine the phenomena. Now, if we are talking about the walking meditation, so we can't keep our mind immediately free from any of these sensations without having enough understanding. Now, in order to develop understanding, we have to properly examine. We need to thoroughly investigate. So, in order to do that, we have to closely look at it. So, therefore, at the beginning, it is very much like we are fairly involved. But interesting point is, mind is calm, mind is tranquil, mind has to be free from inner chatter. But closely investigating what we are sensing. Say you are touching and your foot is touching, and there are different sensations, and you are closely investigating all these different sensations. So with that, the idea is to develop enough clear comprehension and different insights. So more we have that proper insight, more proper understanding, so that very understanding is now counteracting the attachment, counteracting the kind of the delight, counteracting the desire. Now mind start to naturally sort of maintain a kind of a distance. Now previously you do a very closed investigation, but that closed investigation, the result of that understanding slowly starts the mind to deviate from that experience, making a little difference, making a little detachment, and now mind is capable of observing it. It's very much like a passive observation. Things are there, mind is not that interested, and you are not doing any kind of a strenuous practice. Rather, you are aware of it in a relaxed manner, not like before, even though things are available, but your mind is quite relaxed, quite detached, quite uninvolved. And later time, there may be a possibility that your mind get fully detached, fully liberated, temporary, not permanently, fully liberated temporary, and now mind is not established anywhere. So here actually we were discussing that, where your mind is enjoying kind of a temporary liberation, temporary detached state. Now it is not associating anything. So it is a kind of a result of the practice. So in order to achieve that, you need to do proper practice. Proper practice at the beginning, requires close examination, close investigation.
I think you was touched by you with Kumudini's question, but I'll just clarify some points one day. It's just that, you know, if somebody's very thirsty, for instance, they have done a long run or something, and then they drink the water, at that moment, it is a very satisfying feeling. But after that, the person doesn't think about it. So, though at that point he or she enjoyed the water or the orange juice, because you spoke about orange juice, I don't think there's anything to worry about. Would that be right if I said that?
That is the point. Actually, we need to be careful. So we are enjoying. True, we are enjoying. At that moment, are there two involvement? Are there fully kind of an obsession? Or rather, we are able to enjoy it with a detached mind. Yes, now the thirst is going, I mean fading away, and we are being satisfied. But are we fully absorbed to that experience? So that is what we need to verify. Because when we are really enjoying, when we are really involved, then very much like we are absorbed to that experience. We have become that. We have become that flavor. We are born to that flavor. So that is something we need to minimize. So we may be experiencing it. Probably it is a tasty orange juice. But how about keeping the mind relaxed without getting absorbed to that experience? So that is where I feel we have to be a little careful whenever we are going through some pleasurable experience, how to maintain kind of a detached mindset.
Yeah, but if you are aware, I suppose a very thirsty person doesn't necessarily is able to see all those steps. Maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Possible. But you see it as pleasurable at that time, and then you drop it there and move on.
Yeah. I mean, that is what happened. So basically the point is, say you are an experienced practitioner. Say you are doing your satipatthana for a long time. So you are again and again training your mind to be detached. So maintain kind of a detached observation. So experience is there, but whenever experience is there, you are not getting involved in that experience. As much as possible, you are able to observe that experience in an unbiased attitude, detached attitude. So with that skill, you already being developed. Now assume that you are tasting or enjoying a kind of orange juice. That same training may be applicable here as well. Automatically, probably it may get applied so that you are not fully obsessed with that experience. Rather, you are experiencing kind of a favorable, pleasurable thing is there, but your mind is not that disturbed. You are able to maintain the clarity of the mind. You are able to maintain the balance of the mind. So then fairly safe.
Yeah. I think even seeing Buddha was surrounded by beautiful things, beautiful carpets and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, one can appreciate a beautiful carpet or a beautiful picture and then drop it there and say, yes, a beautiful picture, this is a beautiful carpet, drop it there and walk. When you're moving on from there, move on. Isn't that acceptable?
Yeah. Thing is, we need to verify there is no attachment, there is no involvement, there is no chandaraga happening inside the mind. So that we only know, others can't see. Others can only see, okay, he's also enjoying a fruit juice. He's also enjoying an orange juice. He's also going through a beautiful carpet. I mean, that's very similar. But internally, if we consider a practitioner, probably his mind is still maintaining the calmness, still maintaining the clarity. Still, he's not disturbed by the pleasant sensations. And similarly with the painful sensations as well, say he is going through some painful sensations, painful feelings, still he is able to maintain the balanced mind in the middle.
Yes, that's what I was coming to next one. Not quite painful, but you have been speaking about karma for the desires and all that, but also the vyapara, the aversion, ill will, because that is also a form of
karma. Exactly, that is another side, the other opposite side of the karma raga.
Yeah,
another part of it. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So that is also people are full of that as well now. If you look around the world and in Sri Lanka and the whole world,
yeah,
there's so much of vyapara and aversion and ill will and all this. So that is also a thing that people have to be aware of, isn't that right?
Definitely. Because that is the vibhava tanha, no? So I don't like this. I don't like this situation. So I want to get rid of it. So that is another desire.
The other thing is, as human beings, we can't, to be able to live. The lay life, we can't sort of walk through as if there's nothing to enjoy or nothing to look forward to, because then that person becomes a little bit it becomes a little negative, Bhante.
Then negative, we can say, come kind of dry.
because we are still living in a family life, it sometimes you have to balance, otherwise it you have to be careful as a lay person.
Yes.
You are involving other people as well.
And then
you can't sort of stand out as if you're the spoiled sport, you're trying to do things that others don't want to do, kind of thing. So we have to be careful for
definitely.
That also, don't you think so?
Definitely. That's why we have to have kind of a self-compassion. We have to have kind of a openness in our mind. So we have to understand, okay, others are not in the level of my understanding. So I have to have some space for them to do their mistakes and so that we can forgive. So likewise, we have to have kind of a... So that's why the Brahma Viharas are so important. Have kind of loving kindness, compassion, and the equanimous joy, equanimity, and all these things actually do the another balancing part, because sometimes the vipassana alone may be too much critical, and at that point we have to balance the mind with the help of the Brahma Viharas. Okay, don't worry, don't be so critical, just have some kind of forgiveness. So that actually helps to, as you said, to balance the state.
Absolutely, and also Bhante, if I'm enjoying something, I'm aware that I'm enjoying it. we can't not enjoy in this lay life and be all looking, finding fault, and saying we shouldn't be doing that or that. But I then drop it after I finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Because isn't that also a way of doing something in a positive way?
Yeah, that's why actually it is a kind of a slow process. So I can't say immediately no, or I can't say immediately yes. Rather, it is a kind of a slow process. So for example, before you start your practice, say many years ago, say you had kind of obsessive thoughts about something. Say you are too much absorbed to something. You are too much involved with certain discussions or certain activities or certain enjoyment or whatever it is. And with the practice, you are a little sort of letting go certain part of it. Say you are now selectively... You are selectively participating to certain events now. Selectively enjoying certain things. So likewise, now your sense involvement is kind of refining.
Yes.
So it's a kind of a slow process. So that is why. So later, maybe, so you are slowly, even though it's a beautiful thing, so you are able to maintain the mind's balance without getting agitated or without getting restless. So you are able to maintain the calmness of the mind, even though the music is beautiful, even though the food is delicious, even though the tangibles are really present, but still you are able to maintain a kind of a balanced mind. So it's a kind of a gradual process. So if you are trying to do it immediately, I want to become an arahant immediately, I am not enjoying anything, so you can't do it. It's a, just a determination. You will be unsuccessful in it, because there is no proper practice backing you. There is no proper wisdom, say, supporting the mind. So that is why fair amount of practice, fair amount of wisdom coming through the practice is quite important. So that is what the sustaining the mind.
Yeah, because that is also wisdom there. But
exactly.
If you are
exactly.
able to balance your life without being a spoil sport and being the standing out as the, you know, negative person in somebody in the family's eyes. Now, if you are living overseas and you go to see your family in Sri Lanka, I mean, that is very pleasurable.
Definitely.
But you haven't seen them for whatever so much of time. And then when you see them, but you're aware of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's why...
That is why,
when you have a kind of an open heart, when you are with a compassionate mind, you can appreciate, what is really going on. So, and even if you become little emotional, you can quickly come back to your senses, come back to the typical equanimous state quite quickly. You are not, unlike others, thinking for days and crying and sort of thing, you are not getting to that level of absorption. Rather, you can quickly recover or come back to the typical balanced state of mind, equanimous state of mind, fairly quickly.
But then you are aware of it, because you are not human if you are not going to have a loved one, your family. So you have to be able to do those things also and come through that, knowing that you have, it has been a pleasurable union, and now when you leave and come, then you know that also, as you say, you are not crying and you are not having mental proliferation, but
you still
know that that was a happy event.
Correct.
It was a happy event.
Correct.
You can't say that was not a happy event.
Yes, correct, I agree. So there's a comment coming from
right, thank you, Bhante.
There's a comment from Venerable Sudhira.
Yes, Bhante, I think maybe because I have more fresh memory from the lay life. I think one thing that I found very helpful in the Buddha's teaching, especially one kind of trying to agree with the pleasures of the world, I think Lord Buddha's kind of advice for things like dana.
Generosity,
like as a practical way.
Mm.
Because without kind of building that up, then it's very easy to kind of justify the pleasures and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And while they're not bad necessarily, especially for the lay life, there's family and things, the more one does dana and practices this kind of aspect of renunciation, of giving, of helping, then that sort of pleasure in the world can go down naturally, and one can still live within it. So
correct.
That's a very practical way to help.
Practically, true. So another comment is that about the generosity. So as we do various dana, giving up, maybe material and maybe sort of our time, etc. So that also, as Venerable Sudhira mentioned, it's maybe helpful. It is not directly maybe vipassana, but actually as he mentioned, sort of calming down the mind. I mean, it relaxing the mind. It removes any kind of a grudge or any kind of a dryness in the mind. Rather, it generates some amount of compassion, loving kindness, ultimately that present awareness available in the mind. So those are some positive aspects we can incorporate, so that we are ultimately maintaining a very balanced mind, because the balanced mind is fairly important. Because sometimes we take too serious about the practice and we are too serious about the critical analysis, investigation, and sometimes the mind go to another extreme and mind become very dry and restless. So at that time we have to...
And sometimes the mind becomes
Yeah. It can happen.
Yeah.
That is where I'm inside. With the mention about the two types of meditation, Panidhaya Bhavana and Apanidhaya Bhavana. So when you are involved with Apanidhaya Bhavana, the inside practice for a long time, Buddha mentioned that if you feel that there's a kind of a dryness available, now feeling kind of an indifference going to happen, you are finding too many faults within the others, and you, it's very difficult to be with the others. So now, very much like you are losing the balance. Then Buddha say, okay, now it's a time to do Panidhaya Bhavana. Now you take a present object. Now you practice a little bit of Metta. Now you practice a little bit of Buddha Anusati. Now you practice a little bit of compassion. Now you calm down yourself. You got to balance the mind. So this balancing of faculties, is extremely important.
And we also have to practice the four divine abidings towards ourselves or somebody.
Yeah. So time to time have that mentality helps to balance the mind. Yeah. True.
Exactly. Otherwise, we can go totally out of balance. So it is not an easy process, and that's why the Buddha said it's against the grain, it's against the river. So you have to have wisdom to be able to do all of this one.
Yeah. So even in many suttas, like in the Bodhjanga suttas, Buddha talk about seven Bodhjangas, and he is grouping them into three groups. Mindfulness is in one group where there's the monitoring part. The other two groups are into operating in kind of an opposite way. We have to properly balance them. So if we put too much onto the investigation side, effort side, probably we end up with restlessness and finding fault and all those things. On the other hand, if we give too emphasis to the tranquility, calmness, equanimity, probably we may end up with lethargic kind of drowsiness or laziness, that type of thing. So these two sides have to be balanced.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Bhante, do we have time for one more question?
Okay, fine.
Okay. Alinka, go ahead.
Devan Saranai Bhante.
Yes.
In the last part of your Dharma talk, you mentioned going beyond the observer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people who are doing something choicelessly, that there's something that's aware that it's choiceless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all these questions came to a point of neutrality, seeing things neutrally. But can you go into going beyond the observer?
Yeah, so that's the interesting part. So that is the another way, kind of a deeper question. Whenever we are experiencing something, probably we can say, I am not there. So I haven't become the sight, I haven't become the sound, I haven't become the, the smell, whatever it is. But how about here, the observer? Am I not the observer? So this is the kind of a question probably we may have. That is why sometimes people attribute the consciousness as the self. So whatever the things cognizing, so this consciousness as a self. So that is the part we need to slowly eradicate, slowly recognize. And Buddha mentioned, there is no a person, there is no observer going on other than the observing process. So the continuation of this observing process gives the wrong perception that there is a person here, there is an observer here. But other than the observing process, there is no a so-called permanent observer either. So that is the tricky part that we need to point out, that we need to understand. The observing process is going on. But this continuity of the observing process gives a wrong notion of a permanent person who is observing.
What do you do? Do you just... You're still observing the process as well.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So the continuation of observing is going on, but there is no an entity as observer.
Oh. There are just processes that are going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
and I mean externally as well as internally, there are processes evolving, processes happening due to causes and conditions. Other than that, there is no any permanent entity, soul, available either outside or inside.
Okay, I've got another question there.
Yeah.
Say you do, you're doing compassionate work, or say, for example, Bhante, you're giving a Dhamma talk,
mm-hmm,
right? Now,
mm-hmm.
you can say, okay, it's choiceless, it's happening through me. So how would you observe that if you're not observing it, so to speak?
Yeah, that's the thing. So do we really need to have an eye in order to do this?
Right, okay.
I mean, can't we do that without an eye? That is an interesting part. That's the kind of tricky part. So by doing this, am I essential to generate a perception of I am doing it. I am the one explaining. I am the one discussing. I am the one making the Dhamma sermon. So that I making is something to, I have to be vigilant. I have to be careful whether I am making such a conceit. I am within here with respect to this activity. So actually we can discuss that in the latter part of this sutta, where Buddha dealing with this I making. So there's a fair tendency to generate that I making. So I am doing it. I am the one explaining. I am the one teaching. So then I am making an I here, a person, individual here. Again, I am caught. So that is the most important part of the Buddha's teaching. How to avoid even that? How to disclaim that? And just to have a, just to go through the whole process without attributing it to a person, without attributing it to an I, an individual. How to simply allow the process to go through? It's very much like you allow yourself to go through, like, say, wind is coming and wind is going through the body. Not hitting the body, very much like going through the body. Something like that. Say you are going through the process, but you are not making an I, any solid thing, any solid person, but experiences are evolving, experiences are manifesting, one after the other.
And you do that even when, okay, say you're in that state and you have to make a decision. You still make the decision with that removal, so to speak. Is that what you mean?
Maybe. I mean, decision or whatever the activity that... No, the thing is this. Now, say you are doing some administrative work that you have to, control or administer a certain group of other subordinates. At that time, you have to appear as a person. You have to manifest as a person. That can't help.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that there is a person, but at that moment, you are playing kind of a role for the sake of doing it, for the sake of the success in it. But knowingly you are doing it, I am just playing a role. There is no I. I don't need to assume there is an I here. Rather, just process is going on.
Okay, so I think it's just ongoing practice.
Definitely. This is an ongoing practice. And this is a kind of the most difficult part in a way. I mean, even it is mentioned, even the anagami still feel that there is an I available. That's a very beautiful sutta. Probably we can take another time, called Khemaka Sutta. One venerable called Venerable Khemaka, he's a non-returner, anagami. He's telling that I am not taking rupakhanda, the form aggregate, as I. I am not taking feeling aggregate as I. I am not identifying perceptions aggregate as I. I am not considering formations aggregate as I. I am not considering consciousness aggregate as I. But still I have a feeling of I.
Yeah.
Now you can see the subtleness of this situation. So, but the interesting point is, when he is explaining that and he understands how the I making happens, how time to time unknowingly or ignorantly we are attributing an I person onto different these aggregates, so this subtle analysis slowly even fade away that I making, and ultimately he became an arahant. So we have to do more refined investigations onto how this eye making, mind making happen. Then slowly even that part may fade away. So that is where the beauty of the Buddha's teaching, and then we can understand where is really Buddha. He is not as a person, how he has really delivered this preaching, how he has delivered this whole teaching. Not being a person now, not being an individual, now he being the Tathagata, now he is telling a really beautiful Dhamma.
Okay, thank you,
Vante. Yeah, okay. Okay, I think we have spent a fair amount of time today, almost 2 hours. So I think with that we can conclude today's Dhamma sermon and Dhamma discussion. So whatever the merits we have accumulated, we'll attribute to all the past relatives, we'll share with all the celestial beings, and we'll share this with all the beings whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.